Welcome to the Journal of Accountancy podcast, where we talk about the key issues facing the accounting profession. I'm Ken Titions, editorial director with the Journal of Accountancy. Brian Yacker, a CPA and the managing partner of YH Advisors in California, joins us today to bring us up to date on ways for not-for-profits to make their Form 990 preparation easier. Brian also will present at the 2019 AICPA Not-for-Profit Industry Conference, scheduled June 10th through the 12th in Washington, D.C. For more information on the conference, please visit not.aicpastore.com. That's not.aicpastore.com. I know that the Form 990 is quite the complex and voluminous return. That said, do you have any tips or tricks for making the Form 990 preparation process for a nonprofit as effective and efficient as possible?
Yes, most certainly. There are a number of things that the preparer of the Form 990 can do in order to make their Form 990 preparation as effective and as efficient as possible. And I guess starting out, the first thing that you need to do is determine which version of the Form 990 that you should be preparing. There are actually three different versions of the Form 990. Reviewing those three different versions, starting out with the least burdensome one, there is a form called a 990N. N is in Nancy. Any exempt organization whose annual gross receipts are less than $50,000, they are generally eligible to file the 990N. The 990N can only be filed electronically on the IRS's website, and it takes about 10 to 15 minutes a year in order to successfully prepare and file the 990N. Then there is the 990EZ, the letter E, the letter Z. The thing that we say within our office is that the Form 990EZ ain't easy. It actually takes a good amount of time to prepare it, but it does take substantially less time to prepare than the full Form 990. A nonprofit is eligible to prepare the Form 990EZ when both of the following are satisfied. Their annual gross receipts are less than $200,000 and the fair market value of their gross assets are less than $500,000. If both of those are satisfied, then the nonprofit can file the Form 990EZ. If the nonprofit is above either of those thresholds, the $200,000 gross receipts threshold or the $500,000 fair market value of assets threshold, then the nonprofit must file the full Form 990, which is composed of a 12-part core form, which all filers of the 990 must prepare, and also there are 16 different schedules which the nonprofit files if applicable to the organization. So at the end of the day, before doing anything, it is so important for the nonprofit to calculate their gross receipts. And that calculation will determine which of the three versions of the Form 990 need to be filed. Additionally, a preparer of the Form 990, before they get started, before they put one number in one box on the whichever version of the Form 990 they're preparing, they need to make sure that they are familiar with, we'll call it the key terms that are all part of any of the versions of the Form 990, mostly with the full version of the Form 990, which has, of course, more of these key terms than anything else. But it is so essential that a preparer of the 990 or 990EZ understand what needs to be reported on the Form 990. And there are so many terms of art that are included on the 990. The preparer needs to make sure that they understand the definition, or that we'll call it the IRS's definition, of a lot of these terms. And I'm just going to throw out a couple examples of terms of art that are included on the Form 990, including related party, interested person, officer, IRS has a different definition of officer than most of us, how most of us would define it. Lobbying, political, something called private inurement, private benefit, independence. IRS has probably a different definition of independence than either you or I would. Total compensation. Those are just some examples of the very important terms that a preparer of the 990 needs to be very aware of. Where do you find the definition to these? Well, there's actually two great resources that are part of the Form 990 that can help the preparer understand what the definition of these key terms are. The first is, predictably, the instructions. The Form 990 instructions for each separate part of the Form 990 core form and for each of the 16 different schedules often has definitions of key terms on that part or on that schedule. So the first place to look, if you're unsure of the definition of a term, well, actually, even if you think you know the definition of a term on the Form 990, it still is highly recommended that you go to the instructions for the particular part, the particular line that you are preparing, particular schedule that you're preparing, just to make sure you fully understand the definition. Another place to go, and within our office, we do hundreds of Form 990s in a given year. Our preparers are very experienced with most of the terms on the Form 990. That said, every single one of our Form 990 preparers within our office has a copy of the glossary that is part of the Form 990 instructions. So within the Form 990 instructions, there is a glossary, and that glossary defines most, if not almost all, of the important terms that are contained within the Form 990. So to wrap up this portion of it, so very important. First off, before you do anything, before you begin the preparation process for the Form 990, have a calculation of the nonprofit's gross receipts, so you can ascertain which version of the Form 990 that you are required to file. And then also make sure, again, before you start, make sure that the preparer of the 990 fully understands the definitions for all the different terms of art contained within the Form 990.
Thanks, Brian. That's a great reminder of the importance of precision for CPAs as they comply with best practices for filing Form 990. Can you talk about the importance of preparing the Form 990 in proper order now?
Most certainly. And this, in terms of proper order, this is certainly not a legal requirement, but this is certainly in regard to what we'll call best practices, or best practices to improve your efficiency. Well, it's also your effectiveness also in terms of preparing the 990. So within our office, as I said, our office prepares hundreds of Form 990s a year, and this is the order that we recommend that our preparers prepare the Form 990 in. So after they've determined the gross receipts, as we just previously talked about, after they're comfortable with all the different definitions of all the terms of art, the next thing that we recommend is, or that we do within our office when preparing a 990, is we identify all insiders of the organization. Who is an insider of the organization? Any voting member of the board of directors. Key management personnel, like the top management person and the top financial person of the organization, are deemed to be insiders. Something called a key employee is deemed to be an insider of the organization. Family and business relationships to the insiders just described, those folks are considered to be insiders of the organization. And then under certain circumstances, former insiders can be considered insiders of the nonprofit. We go and we identify any individual who is deemed to be an insider. We're going to need that information up front because there's numerous parts of the Form 990 and schedules of the 990 where we need to identify transactions with insiders and provide a wealth of information regarding those transactions with insiders. How can you identify a transaction with an insider if you don't know who your insiders are? So first and foremost, well, not first, we've already talked about identifying gross receipts, but way up front in the Form 990 preparation process, identify your insiders. And then after you have identified your insiders, then you can identify any transactions between the nonprofit and an insider. And if there are transactions between the nonprofit and an insider, there will be those will either be disclosed, most likely, on either Part 7 of the Form 990 core form or Schedule L. There's also Schedule R potential reporting also for transactions between the nonprofit and insiders that are entities, like a related corporation or a related exempt organization. Those transactions with those type of entities would be reported on Schedule R. And you can't it's not efficient for you to just go through and prepare the form based on how the IRS has laid out the form. You can do it. But I can about guarantee you'll spend more hours on the form doing it that way, and you won't be as effective. The more likely there'll be errors. So after we have identified insiders and identified transactions with insiders, we go to Part 4 of the Form 990 core form, and that is where we identify which of the 16 different schedules we're going to need to prepare. Why do we want to do that up front? Because we want to know what sort of information we need to ask for from the client. There's all sorts of different information or different requirements for the 16 different schedules, and we want to know which of these 16 schedules is applicable for the particular nonprofit so we can ask for that information from the client. We don't want to be halfway into the preparation of the return and continually asking the nonprofit for, oh, we need this to fill out this schedule. We need it. It's not effective. It is not efficient, and it's certainly not something that the nonprofit likes either.
We're here with Brian Yacker of YH Advisors talking about Form 990 best practices. Brian, can you tell us what CPAs should be looking for as they review the Form 990?
Most certainly. They're actually within our office when we have done a draft of the Form 990. There are actually two levels of review that we undertake within our office here. The first we call within our office is a detail level review. And that is where a manager within our office here makes sure that all the numbers in the boxes on the Form 990 are the appropriate amounts. So in essence, the detail level reviewer uses the client's financials, whether they're internal financials or audited financials or reviewed financials, and then make sure that the appropriate amounts are carried over, reported on the Form 990. After that detail level review has taken place, we then do a second level of review, which within our office we call a top level review. Some firms refer to it as an IRS review. This level of review is very important to ensure that the nonprofit has filed a complete and accurate return that also puts the nonprofit's best foot forward. When we are undertaking a top-level review, here are a couple things that we are looking at, that we're focusing on during that top-level review. First off, the top-level reviewer looks for any red flags. A red flag is any item that is reported on the face of the Form 990 that could lead a government regulator to believe, government regulator being IRS, a state attorney general, could lead that government regulator to believe that the organization has done something illegally or done something wrong and could be subject to penalties. A red flag doesn't mean that they definitely have done something illegal or something wrong. It's just an indicator to the government regulator that they possibly could have. And so as a top-level reviewer, we're doing a top-level review. We are always looking for these red flags and then investigating them to make sure that if we're reporting, if an item on the Form 990 is labeled a red flag, And we want to make sure we're accurately reporting it on the 990, because we want to minimize, if not eliminate, any red flags on the return. Sometimes we have no choice. If the organization truly did something illegal, then of course we need to report it on the 990. We try to put our best foot forward, but of course we do. But there's other instances when we do our top-level review that there's a red flag on there, and then when we investigate the facts behind it, we discover, oh, we didn't have this accurate, we can phrase this differently, or we don't have to report it at all, whatever the case may be. So, very important, top-level review, identify red flags. Also, reconcile certain lines, certain parts, certain schedules of the Form 990 to other lines, parts, schedules of the Form 990. There are one of the, I guess, burdens of the voluminous Form 990 and all its schedules is that the IRS asks for the same information to be reported in different places, different parts of the Form 990. And so additional part of the Form 990 top-level review that we do is reconciling, is making sure that the same information is being reported on a different on this part and then another schedule, lines, whatever the case may be. Why are we diligent about that? It's because one of the ways that the IRS identifies Forms 990 that they're going to audit is by doing those exact same reconciliations. And if there's too many places where the information should be the same and it's different, that highly increases the nonprofit's risk of being audited by the IRS. And then the final part of our, and again, this is a big picture, of our top-level review of a Form 990 is making sure that the board of directors or a subcommittee thereof has had the time and the opportunity to adequately review the Form 990 to make sure that the board has basically signed off on all the information that is being reported on the 990. Is that a legal requirement? No. Is it a best practice? Most certainly. And then outside of the top-level review, when we're ready to file the Form 990 with the IRS, within our office, even though we're not legally required to do so, we electronically file every Form 990 that we prepare on behalf of our many, many clients. Why do we do that? We do that because you cannot electronically file an incomplete return. Why are we so worried about an incomplete return? An incomplete return is deemed to be a return never filed. And so if you file an incomplete return with the IRS, IRS is essentially going to ignore that. They'll send you a notice, hopefully, that your Form 990 was incomplete, but it's as if you never filed anything. And if you don't file any version of the Form 990 with the IRS for 3 consecutive years, that is an automatic revocation of your tax-exempt status, not something you want for obvious reasons.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you sharing this information, which I'm sure will be extremely helpful for not-for-profits. I'd also like to thank our readers for listening today and remind everyone that for more information on the topics and trends that are important to the accounting profession, you can visit journalofaccountancy.com or Podomatic.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.